Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Did you know that I'm back doing another live show? Yes, I know, it's been a while, hasn't it? It's called The Stalker, and I share investigations where I learned probably a little too much about that murky world. The show is on Saturday, the 25th of February at the State Library of Victoria. Tickets are through Eventbrite. Hello, and I trust 2023 will be a good year for us all. In my 27 years as a Victorian policewoman, I investigated everything from a stolen bicycle to a stolen life. Policing taught me a lot about human nature, which I explore in my podcasts with a variety of fascinating guests discussing the human side and impact of crime, not only on their lives, but mine as well. My podcasts are not suitable for children and some adults for that matter. If you find yourself affected by my subject matter, please contact Lifeline or any other support service or person that you feel comfortable with. Thank you.
What he's trying to do, he's trying to kill me, and if that's a consequence, that's what has to happen as part of the job. I thought if I shot him, he would have lost control of the car and would have killed someone innocent. So I made that decision and I took that risk.
Jeff Garland is a retired senior sergeant from the New South Wales Police Force, having served nearly 16 years before being medically discharged with post-traumatic stress, PTS, in 2011. Gee, that must be a surprise to so many of you. Fancy a police person with PTS, I hear you say. I notice Jeff calls it PTS and not PTSD or PTSI, but I'm going to dig down into that later on and find out why. But like so many of us, Jeff knew that something wasn't quite right with what was keeping him awake at night and the constant sadness that he was feeling, but he just couldn't quite understand what was happening. And of course, he wouldn't dream of talking with somebody about it. But I suppose in another way, how can you talk to somebody about something that you don't understand yourself? Jeff's deteriorating mental health came to a head one day when he was nearly killed trying to stop an offender driving a stolen utility. His actions on that day I could only describe as heroic. But police do these type of acts on a daily basis, never thinking of the consequences. It's just what we do to try and keep the community safe. Jeff finally realised that he was in trouble and sought professional help. And I know this will encourage many. But because Jeff reached out for that help, he is now, in his words, fully recovered from post-traumatic stress and his loving life. Jeff now has a law degree. He's passionate about helping people start those awkward conversations that he had so much difficulty with himself in those troubling years. He's a published author and now a trauma recovery expert, master NLP coach, don't worry, we'll go into it later, timeline therapist and hypnotherapist, specialising in emergency services in the military. He certainly hasn't been sitting around feeling sorry for himself. His book is called Split Second, because that's all it takes to become a hero or mauled by the press and public for making the wrong decision or no decision at all sometimes. A police person can make hundreds of split-second decisions in a shift, if not more, and one of those decisions nearly cost Jeff his life. I've got to say right here and now that our friends in Queensland know only too well about those split-second decisions. It's been a really sad week for us this week in Australia. We're all hurting for the members in Queensland, their families and their colleagues. But in fact, police everywhere. It could have happened to any of us, couldn't it, Jeff? So thank you and welcome to NFI.
Thank you, Narelle. I appreciate you taking the time to include me in this interview. I love the fact I can share my experiences to help other people. And in terms of what happened in Queensland, very, very sad occasion. It's an unfortunate reality that we should not have to face as police officers, that could be a consequence of our actions. We're out there doing our best to serve the community and keep everyone safe. And sometimes people take it to the extreme and they take our lives. And every day we risk our lives being taken. And it doesn't matter whether you're a serving officer or retired or just a member of the community to hear such tragedy to occur, just especially to such young police who are just simply following up on a job and doing what they're paid to do to try and keep people safe. It's just an absolute awful thing that happened, and my heart and feelings go out to everyone involved, the officers' families, those officers involved, every police officer serving or retired, and anyone else in the community that's affected by that horrible tragedy. So unfortunately, it's happened, and my thoughts and prayers go out to them all.
Yes, and I concur, Jeff. It's awful, and I don't know about you, but I've been out of policing now since 2014, well, really 2012. And even after Queensland, I still reach out to my friends who are in the job. I still reach out to former colleagues, and we all check on each other. It's just something that touches everyone's hearts, but particularly those of us who, as I said before, it could have happened to any of us, because I don't know a police person that's never been to a domestic situation or just a knock on the door to make sure, as we call it, a welfare check. It happens every day.
It is. One of the things I like most about being in the police was as part of a policing family. So we're always going to be part of that blue family, whether you're serving or not. And yeah, we definitely all in our careers go through incidents and jobs that could turn out to be life-threatening. I know I was involved in probably around 15 to 20 life-threatening incidents in my career. But sometimes it can be the mundane jobs, the jobs you go to all the time where there's no actual potential threat or you believe there's no perceived threat at all, when that's the ones that could turn most dangerous. So we do the best that we can with the information we have and the equipment and skills that we have. But sometimes we get people like this, who these poor brave officers were confronted with and who had no chance and no choice. And that was a consequence.
Yes, I was going to ask you if we are exposed to so many different and unusual situations. Some are, terribly sad, like Queensland. Some are uplifting. Some are just unbelievable. And I was going to ask you about some of your lighter moments that you could share with us, but I just don't know if that's the right thing to be talking about today. I just feel I might move on. I'm sure that, and maybe as the interview goes on, we might talk about it, but I just don't feel I can go there after what we've been speaking about. So I might just start within your 16 years. You rose to the rank of senior sergeant, and you obviously attended and had to deal with a lot of different situations. What would be your most, the proudest moment you've had in your policing career?
The fact that I lasted 16 years. and I know what you're saying in terms of having to focus on the positive stuff in the career with what's going on. And, I mean, all jobs has its ups and downs and stuff, and it's great to be respectful in terms of that. But I know there's a lot of people out there struggling with post-traumatic stress and with what's going on, but it's important to look back on those positive times in your career, even though we're not going to talk about them. It's essential that you focus on the good stuff that happened in your career rather than just focus on the negative stuff. So, yeah, it's part of a policing family, lots of positives and negatives as well. But especially in times when things aren't going so well, or you're struggling, it's good to look back on the positive things, the time you used to laugh with your comrades and colleagues and stuff, and all the jobs you attended and the differences that you make. But yeah, certainly with what's going on now, it's a time to be respectful in terms of how everyone's feeling and to respect the sacrifice that has been made.
You know, It's so sad on so many levels, but I'm just thinking then with you talking, there are so many fantastic, funny, as I said, unbelievable moments, and I think it's really sad that the particularly the couple of members that have passed away up in Queensland, they won't experience the breadth and the depth of that beautiful, strong camaraderie between police, you know, between our blue brothers and sisters. They'll never experience that. I mean, they've experienced a little bit of it, but certainly, as you say, in your 16 years, in my 27, there are just so many funny, really uplifting moments. And it's a shame that those two members won't experience, you know, some of the highs that we have, you know.
It is, but and it's a shame. Like, police are, like, out of all the emergency services, they're the ones who criticise and judge the most, and, you know, they're the ones that get in the most trouble. But it's unfortunate that it takes something like this for the community to actually support the police and show how much that they appreciate what they do. It takes a loss like this, a tragedy like this, for the community to actually rally behind the police when this is the same thing that we do every single day, all around the country, all around the world. This is what we do. This is what we've, you know, committed ourselves to do. It's our purpose. It's, we want to make a difference. And we're usually the ones who get in trouble and criticised and stuff like that. And it's a shame that it takes something like this for, you know, the police to get the acknowledgement that they deserve. And the overwhelming support for the officers that were killed and involved in that situation is just testament to, like, how important policing is and the strength of the policing family. To although they're not here to enjoy those good experiences, the overwhelm of emotion and support that's come as a result of what's happened to them is just significant in terms of the sacrifice that they've made and the strength of the blue community.
Mm. And so when you heard about Queensland, I'm sure you felt the same as I did, but my heart just goes, it's like a bit of a stab in the heart. Oh, it's just so sad. We could talk about it forever. It's but anyway, we're thinking of anybody up in Queensland. We're thinking of you all. So, Jeff, you got to senior sergeant in policing. Where did you do? In 16 years, where was the best place you worked? What did you enjoy the most?
I did several roles in the police. Like, I joined in 96. My first station was Gosford on the New South Wales Central Coast. After leaving the College of Knowledge, where we all taught the warm and fuzzy rhetoric that we get told to keep us on the street. And I think my first arrests, I got confronted by a naked felon who spat blood on me and tried to throw punches at me and stuff. And that quickly, you know, made me realise that, you know, what you learned at the academy wasn't going to completely prepare you for what you see on the streets, because it's just completely different. So a lot of experiences there. My first football shoot, chasing escapee, he escaped from custody up here and chased him over back fences and through a swimming pool and end up arresting him when he's hanging on one side of the fence and I've got his jacket. I'm hanging on a trampoline, just hanging over the fence, hanging onto him, and he tried to get out of his jacket and I threw myself over the fence and said, no, you have the right to remain wet, using my sense of humour and stuff. And then a big Doberman come up to the fence and all that sort of stuff, and had a carpe shoot where the bloke was armed, and he ran a police car and over at West Gosford, and as he was trying to arrest him, he was reaching for the shotgun under the seat to shoot me. And that was like within the first few months of my career. So I certainly changed a lot of things. Then I put my hand up to go to Redfern when it was Redfern, when things were really serious and violent. It's something that I wanted to do, to be part of. Although that was the place in which most of my traumas were occasioned, it's a place that I really enjoyed working at because I got involved in a lot of things, really tested myself, and ultimately it ended that part of my career on the back of the ute back in 2001. Great idea at the time. And then took some time off, put my hand up, went and got help. Even with the incident with the ute, like, I knew I wasn't coping beforehand. I just didn't realise why. I just thought I was weak and in the wrong job. So because of the lack of education and awareness. But I put my hand up. I did the unpolice-like thing, an unbloke-like thing, went and got help. As a result, I was able to process my events, returned to work for 10 years. Then I went to prosecuting for a while. I prosecuted all around the state with about 30 different courts, then went back to general duties here on the Central Coast again at Tugra Lakes. My first shift here was that big storm weekend in July 2009, I think it was, 2007, when the Pasha Bulka crashed, decided to park itself at Nobby's Beach, where there's massive storms and things like that. So that was my reinitiation back into life in uniform back on the Central Coast. So I got involved in a lot of things here. There's that incident, lots of other incidents. I wrestled with an offender who was trying to suicide on a lookout here on the Central Coast. He tried to throw himself and me off the cliff a few times. I went to save someone who I just thought was a drink driver who decided to jump in the entrance channel. So I thought he was just trying to avoid arrest because he was drunk and he was drowning. So I risked my life to go do that and grabbed him and he held me underwater, tried to drown me. I found out that he was in a stolen car, that he was a high-risk offender, and he wasn't such a nice bloke after all. But so lots of different things. And then I got promoted to senior sergeant down as one of the bosses at the Dowling Centre in the court in Sydney. So I was there for a while, injured my back, and then that just led to the end of my career back in 2011. As a result, lost my identity, became suicidal, didn't know who I was, and it was one night where I almost was going to follow through with it. I'm glad I didn't. But then I just used the resources that I had before, the skills I had before, and I've been able to process all my events from the past so that they don't affect me. I can visit my locations. I can talk about my events in detail without being affected. And, of course, now I run my business helping people, especially those who are struggling because of their service, because of my lived experience, what I went through. I didn't want anyone else to be affected by it. So that's my passion. That's my purpose.
Yeah, and we will certainly go into that, Jeff, because how you've been able to cope with all these traumatic situations is pretty incredible. But can I just go back? You said to me, or I read somewhere, that you recall when you were first diagnosed with PTS, which was at Redfern, is that right?
Yeah, that's after I jumped in the betray of the ute, yeah.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a minute because that story is just unbelievable. But you had no idea what it was, did you? Only that there was something consuming you. So when did you first notice that something wasn't quite right, and what was it that was consuming you?
It was probably, I'd been at Redfern for 3 or 4 years and I was just getting involved in a lot of incidents at work. Wrestling with armed offenders, those with knives and guns working in the block when it was the block, lots of was involved in a few riots, had people try and take my life as arrest, involved in the rest of the black market murders where seconds after they just murdered some other opposing members of the OMCG, they come out running with the guns with a car pursuit, foot pursuit, that sort of stuff. So lots of things I was taking on board, but I didn't realise the effect it was having on me. But then I'd get involved in a serious incident, but then I'd take more risk because there was no debriefing, there was no support. It was just like, get over it, get on with it, that sort of thing. So I was just getting involved in more and more things, and there was I got involved in about 6 serious incidents in a very, very short period of time just before I jumped in the ute. So I just could feel I wasn't coping. Like, I was getting very emotional, I was withdrawing, I was getting angry and stuff like that, and I just knew I wasn't the same sort of person. So I just thought that that was part of the job. And, of course, as part of the culture, you drink alcohol in order to cope and process what you're going through. Yep. So that's what I did. Yep. And then I jumped in the tray of the ute that day, and that was, I thought was going to be my last day alive. I definitely thought I was going to die, but it was definitely my last day at Redfern.
Yes, and look, I think, can you tell us about that? Because I've only heard it briefly with what you told me, but it's pretty incredible what you did. Can you tell us about it?
As I said before, it was a good idea at the time. Like, I mean, I had a feeling that day on the way to work, it wasn't going to be a good day. I should have listened. Got to work, actually got in trouble from an inspector for something I didn't do, and then that just put me on the wrong foot. And then we started patrolling around the block area. I saw the ute, like you always do. There's always cars down there that, you know, don't belong there. I did a transport on the car, come up stolen. I could have simply just gone and got it recovered, but, you know, I was in the mood to chase someone and get an arrest because, you know, you just take the car off them. It's not preventing anything. So, and then we just drove around the block, and then he started driving towards us. And then my new probationary constable, one of his first shifts in the cops, was working with me that day. I just told him to block the car in. We blocked it in. I got out the passenger side thinking that's going to be an easy arrest. So I was in full uniform. I said, mate, just stay there. You're under arrest. Next.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Second, there's like a blackout sort of thing. I'm in the tray of the ute as it rumbles down the road. Luckily I had my portable radio offside. I was just standing back in the police car like, what do I do? And it just started from then. He started driving around. That was like 8:30 on a Monday morning, peak hour traffic, people on the way to work. Like Redfern's just outside of the city, for those that don't know. It's like one street away from Central Train Station and stuff, so it's very, very close. He just started driving around the streets heading in towards the city, swerving over the road, ramming parked cars. I was in complete fear for my life. I called urgent on the radio. The operator actually thought I was in pursuit of the car, but then I told him I was in the tray of the ute.
Sorry, that's not even funny.
Looking back, I can laugh at it now. So, yes, it's like I'm not pursuing the radio. I'm actually in the tray at the back sort of thing, and that's when the penny kind of dropped and everyone went, okay, here we go. So, and, like, I was in fear for my life, so I pulled my gun out and he was looking at me, trying to throw me out, doing everything he could to do it, running red lights, ramming parked cars, swerving all over the road, braking heavily. I was lucky that there was a short piece of rope. So it was a Toyota Land Cruiser Ute, for those who know their cars. There was a big tray, only two people could sit. There was the driver and the passenger in the car. And luckily, just behind the window, there was a length of rope, and I wrapped that around my hand, and there was a toolbox on each side of the tray. So I'm hanging on to the rope in one hand, and my radio calling, like, trying to call locations. Then I had my gun out, hoping he would stop. That just seemed to make him more intent to get away, and heads in towards Ultimo. And there's people everywhere, and we're going up over this pedestrian crossing. And for some reason, it just parted. Like, I thought, no, he's going to run somebody over. And I thought at that stage I was going to shoot him, because if I didn't stop him, then he could kill someone innocent. But then at the same time, I thought that if I shoot him and it injures him, at least what he's trying to do, he's trying to kill me. And if that's a consequence, that's what has to happen as part of the job. But if I shot him, he would have lost control of the car and would have killed someone innocent. So I made that decision and I took that risk. So there's actually CCTV footage of this, which made it easier for me to deal with. But then he went around blind corners and stuff called for assistance. So police, on the footage, you can see a police truck coming towards me, and then just disappears behind us as it goes past. And it's like, yes, it's going to be over. No, it's not. So, and then we headed in toward the city. He nearly hits cars, and he runs people over. He gets airborne into the park opposite Central Train Station. Being on grass, a car starts spinning around in circles. I then said, I've got to do it. So I end up smashing my hand and gun through the window. The passenger takes off, and then the driver jumps out. I start chasing him, and then he jumps the fence, and I couldn't because I was exhausted, I was tired, I was injured. And then he ran away into the main street, unbeknownst to him, he ran into a police and into a building full of police on a training day, so he didn't get too far. So he got arrested, which was great, and then I just sat there, and, like, I was bleeding. I had members of the public come up to me and just actually look after me, give me water, tend to my injuries and stuff like that. And that was the day I just wanted to walk away. I didn't want to be a policeman anymore. And there was times in the pursuit that, or in the incident, that I was actually looking at the road. Everything was slow motion. My daughter at that stage, she was 2 months old. And I thought, if he just pulls over now, I'm just going to get out and walk away. I don't care if he gets away. I don't care who he is. But that didn't happen. So I ended up going off work. I was in hospital for a little while. I asked the inspector to give my then wife a call to let her know. He said he would. But then I get a message. She actually rang my phone, which I dropped in the tray of the ute, and just to tell me that her daughter was laughing at Elmo or something. And that's when the detective said, look, you haven't heard, Jeff's in hospital. So she came down, got me from hospital, got taken back to the police station in the back of a wagon that had all this equipment in it, so I didn't even get a seat to sit down on. So I was just been through this incident where I almost died and got conveyed back to the police station in the back of an appointment sort of right van. Where I had to stand up and hold on, had bleeding injuries in my ribs and hands and stuff, and I was a mental mess.
Seriously.
And then I got back to the police station, and my wife was there at the time, and she said to me, my debrief was, when you're finished with him, send him to me and give me a go. That was it. So I grabbed my stuff, walked out, never to return.
Gee, I wonder why. You know, there are so many questions in that scenario, but a couple I want to go back to. You said that you blacked out at some point and you were in the back of the ute. Does that mean that because the only reason I'm asking that is when I was diagnosed with PTSD, or PTSI, or PTS, we'll cover that in a minute.
Yeah.
But when I was diagnosed, I had an incident where I blacked out as well, but it was for about 20 minutes and it was referred to as an amnesia event. Do you believe that that was some sort of amnesia event from stress, or why did you black out? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. In terms of when I black out, it's not like I was passed out on the ground. It's just the fact that there's a gap in terms of me standing next to his window saying, don't move, you're under arrest, to me being back of the ute, being driven away. So how I got my my frame into the back of that ute, I still don't recall.
I'm with you.
Yeah, so it's like, I can't explain it, but that's just, the next thing I know was in the back of the ute, dropping away, going, okay, this is real.
I suppose there's always going to be gaps, isn't there, with any traumatic incident. You're never going to remember it second by second. But another thing that really... I'm just shaking my head here. I shake my head a lot when I speak to police. There are just so many things that happen to us where there is no just the care and support, like there is none. Like the fact that you have just been released from hospital, you're not put in the back of a nice car and somebody's looking after you. It's hop in the back here, mate, just hang on. I don't understand how anybody could do that. And then you get back to the police station, like nobody said, do you want to go home, have a cup of tea with your wife, come back tomorrow morning? There's just no care. I'm speechless, Jeff. And that's unusual for me.
I know, it's like 20, it's still like over 20 years ago, but I'm sure that there's some form of improvement. But that's just how it was, especially in a place like Redfern and things like that. Like, not supposed to show that you're not coping, that what you're going through, you're being affected by what you've been involved in. But yeah, it certainly didn't make me want to go back. And I left Redfern and I didn't hear from anyone at work either, except when I had a brief at Steam. They wanted to know when I was going to finish that. And it's just, It's part of the process, especially back in those days, and certainly doesn't encourage you to actually reach out and get help if you get that type of support. But you know, no matter what you're going through, if you're affected by it, you have to do what's best for you, and that's what I did. I ultimately went, look, I don't care what anyone else thinks. I need to take care of me, for me and my family, so I can actually get through this and then decide what I'm going to do after that. So a lot of people don't want to go off because of the stigma around it, but you've got to do what you've got to do. You've got to put yourself first above your career and everything else.
And looking back, when you say you never set foot in Redfern again, so can you tell us about those following days and weeks? Like you just said then, which is well, it's not surprising, it should be, but that you didn't have any, somebody ring you from the station, how are you going, mate, gee, that was a great job, or did you have anything like that?
I had, like, obviously had some friends and stuff like that, but nothing in terms of management and things like that. It's all in terms of having statements done and things like that. My uniform was there, and there's no form of real support in terms of making sure I'm okay and everything else. And it was devastating. Like, I'd just been through such a traumatic ordeal, and I had to admit I wasn't coping. So I definitely turned to alcohol a lot, shut myself down. Didn't really want to do anything. Like a lot of flashbacks and stuff like that, and trying to think of, you know, why did that happen? Why did I do that? How could the outcome? I should have done this differently, and all that sort of stuff. In Queensland, there might be a lot of issues now in terms of like the survivor guilt and what they could have done differently. But for me, it's like, you know, I was involved in this. Like, obviously, I survived. I'm very lucky to have. It's about assessing and reassessing and trying to work out how it all happened, and then just basically shutting down. For me, it wasn't the thought of me going back to work. I couldn't even identify myself as a policeman. I just didn't care. I knew that I wasn't coping. I just wanted to spend time with my family.
Mm. Yeah, it sounds to me like it was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Had many straws in my career.
Yes, I don't doubt that. And so you said that you came back. What surprised me was, after all that, and all those incidents, obviously they're building up, and that one was just the last straw of all the straws. But you then came back. Did you have any treatment, or did you just how did you come back from that?
Well, I put my hand up. I admitted I wasn't coping. I had no idea hadn't been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress at that stage. I had no idea what it was. I just thought just been affected by that job, and didn't understand the connection between the other jobs, how it was building up and compounding and to that actual point. So I went and saw my GP, got referred to a psychologist, who then referred me to a psychiatrist, did a lot of talk therapy, exposure therapy, and it was a process of unpacking all those things, which took a period of time. I've been asking for the because there was CCTV footage of the incident that I was after that, because I wanted to have a look at it in order to help me to process what I've been involved in. They wouldn't release it to me for 6 months, and eventually it was. And as soon as I watched the video, like, for so long, the flashbacks and nightmares I was trapped in the tray of the ute. That was my perspective about what happened. But as soon as I got the CCTV footage, I was no longer trapped. I was actually an outsider looking in at this officer in the back of the ute going through this ordeal. And it totally disconnected the association and the emotions in terms of what I've been going through.
And it completely changed your outlook?
Perspective. Yeah, it interrupted my patterns of thought. So I was no longer trapped, because when we experience the trauma, the mind takes in everything that's happening. So when we get the flashbacks, we react as if we're going through it. So for me, for 6 months, I was trapped in that ute, going through everything around the corners and the gun and everything else, and I was trapped until the fact that I saw the footage, and that gave me completely new perspective, which means I wasn't just looking for that focus. I could look at it from a completely independent and safe perspective.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, go on. Yeah.
No, you're okay.
I was just going to say, I must say to the listeners, if you feel you can, it's worth having a look. I looked at the CCTV footage myself, and it's on your website. Could you just tell the listeners how they can see that, because it is pretty amazing?
Yeah, just on the website. So it's jeffgarland.com.au, so jeffgarland.com.au. It's on there with other videos and things. I was actually interviewed by the Sunday night program with Melissa Doyle back in 2014. Just after my book got published, which raised a lot of awareness in terms of post-traumatic stress and the suicide wall in New South Wales and things like that. So definitely have a look at it, because a lot of people go through a lot of serious incidents. I was lucky enough in this instance to have it recorded in order for me to be able to interrupt my patterns and disconnect the trauma that I've been involved in. But definitely jump on and have a look. There's actually there's the footage as well as the police radio tape as well. So it's like a commentary of what my actual, how I was feeling, the call sign, what I was saying, and the actual footage itself.
Mm. And when were you actually formally diagnosed with post-traumatic stress?
It would have been a few months after the incident when I eventually went and saw a psychologist and psychiatrist. Yep. So, yeah, I still had no idea what it was, but that was what it was. But then, like, I decided, no, I didn't want this to define me anymore. I actually, after watching the footage 6 months later, I was actually able to return to work in a police station in Lake Macquarie. So I still couldn't wear uniform, still couldn't identify myself as a policeman. I couldn't talk about the events and stuff, obviously. But so I went to the got sent to the police station as part of my rehab because I wanted to at least try to go back because I love my job. I'd only been in the job 5 years, and it's like I didn't want my career to end like this. It's something I thought I was always going to do. So my first day in the police station, walk in and go, everyone, this is Jeff, he's got PTSD. It's like, hello, everybody. Oh. So yeah. I ended up working in the back of the police station doing warrants and stuff like that, which was fine. I didn't all plain clothes and stuff. And then one day I was actually going to go to a training day, which was good. It was good to be around the police before. And so actually on my way to the training day, I had a fatal car accident happen in front of me. So on top of everything else I was going with, this accident happened right in front of me. But then something happened. It's like I switched straight back into policing mode. So I pulled the car over. I did what I had to do, checked on the drivers, and one was deceased, called 000. So everything was, I was in that mode. So nothing else that was going on peripherally in relation to my traumas and everything else going to the training day, it wasn't there. And I was okay. Even had the sergeant come up to me when he arrived at the scene, goes, are you okay? It's like, I've never been asked that before. What do I say? And I know I was okay until the wife of the deceased driver turned up and she was in tears, and that was it. I went home, grabbed a bottle of scotch and had a scotch in one hand, my psychiatrist on the other hand, and started to deal with that. But in that moment, I decided, no, I've still got this passion for the job. And because of that, I was able to then focus on going back to work back to prosecuting. I was still a police officer, still able to carry my badge and stuff like that. So that incident, strangely enough, inspired me to get back, because I thought that I was lost, I was a mess, but being able to get there and do the job like I did in the way I did and the circumstances that happened, it's like, no, I still got this. And then I was able to go back and do it and then get back to work and process all my events before doing that, and then went back to my start of my prosecuting career, which I always wanted to do in the police. I didn't think it would be so soon, but I was glad I was able to go and do that, to be in the police, to go and do that, and then eventually went back to uniform and then went back to prosecuting, and then that was the end of my career.
Now, I wanted to talk about that 10 years that you were you went back to policing, and you said that was the end. Your PTS returned, I believe, and did that return with a thud, or was it just like a slow burn which came to a head with a certain situation or incident, or how did that happen?
Well, for me, it was not so much the incidents that I've been involved in before. It was all the new stuff I got involved in.
Pretty amazing, isn't he? I don't know about you, but I just loved the bit where he's on the back of the ute. He somehow managed to call 000 and they assume that he's chasing an offender in a car. And I think it's great how he has to try and explain or convince 000 that he's actually in the back of the offender's car while the offender is driving it erratically. Oh, I just thought, sorry, Jeff, but I just thought that was very amusing. Anyway, next week we hear more about Jeff's recovery from PTS, how he now has a law degree and many other accolades. And he could be many things, but he wants to help others recover how he has. And he's just so passionate about people suffering trauma to consider other methods, such as, for instance, NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which he specializes in teaching. He is testament to the fact that you can recover from trauma. The triggers, etc., don't need to be a life sentence. Jeff will explain it all to you next week. But if you are troubled and not improving, have a listen to Jeff, because it might just be the answer to your troubles. Anyway, have a good week, everyone. Bye. As you've probably noticed, we've moved to a new platform called Acast. I think that's the right expression, I've got no idea. And my previous reviews haven't transferred over. I need reviews. Could you do me a favour and put up a review? And thank you so much for your support and patronage. With your help, I can give you that little bit extra. Thanks.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.